Minnesota Vikings, welcome back to the Living in Loserville podcast, Purple People Eaters Edition. I'm your host, Chris Carlson. My co-host, Aaron Miller, will be joining us shortly. Welcome back, everyone. Hopefully, everybody's doing okay. Like I said time and time again, we really appreciate people listening to the podcast at this moment during this pandemic. I know a lot of people have some people have a ton of stuff going on. Others don't as much, right? But we're all in this together. And like I said, we just appreciate the support. And our thoughts are going out to everyone, the essential workers, the people putting it on the line, no matter if you work at a hospital, if you work at a grocery store, yada, yada, yada. So I definitely want to, we definitely want to show our gratitude towards the listens. So we got a little... little everything when it comes to a little mixed bag of Viking stuff. We will talk about the schedule that just got released moments ago. There's a 3-hour fucking show on ESPN previewing the season. So, you know, we don't have sports going on. I think it's day 53 without sports. Although the South Korea does have their baseball league up and going, and ESPN is showing it. Just a heads up. If you're fiending for sports out there. So we're going to talk about the schedule. There is some rumors about let's bring back Griff, our guy Griff. We'll talk about that, or Klein or somebody else. We'll talk about, you know, if there is some things to do, which we both think there is, in free agency, whether it's a cornerback or a guard. We'll name a couple that are still out there. This is kind of going around as far as the offensive line talk, especially in the Facebook groups and just online everywhere almost, talking about the offensive line. Have we, and it's been an ongoing thing the last chunk of years, have we invested enough in it? That's an argument that's pretty one-sided. Probably no, we haven't. But, you know, we'll talk about this current O-line that actually might be upgraded still potentially, knock on wood, but we'll talk about it. You know, is it, people are just kind of wondering, is it worthy to make a Super Bowl run? Is it even going to be better than last year? And that wasn't a Super Bowl run. So we'll talk about that. But a good portion of this show will be back in the day reminiscent about the good old 1980s Vikings, specifically the 1986 or 7, excuse me, climax NFC championship game against the Redskins. So we'll talk about some of the players on that roster. I'll kind of, we'll kind of talk about, you know, our way up. I actually have the roster from the 80s all the way to the 87 and how it just kind of slowly came together. I do have some audio clips from like a 25-minute video from back in the day that you should definitely go check out. It's a great video. It's fun to watch. And you forget about stuff. Like, I remember the strike season. I do recall that that happened that year. And I remember that our record for our strike, our scabs basically sucked really bad, and it affected our, well, we were a wild card off of that. But just going to that New Orleans victory, that San Francisco big upset, and then the heartbreaker on the goal line, which could have went overtime potentially with Darren Nelson. So we'll bring you back. We're going to talk 1980s Minnesota Vikings with the climax, like I said, 1987. Maybe we'll kind of look at the roster 88, 89. And then, in, you know, maybe next week, if there is no free agency news, knock on wood, hopefully there's a corner at least, we may go back to the 90s and climax with 98 as well. We all know how that ended. We know how all these end, don't we? Unfortunately, that's why we call it Living in Loserville. Anyway, so we're going to give you a little, like I said, mixed bag of everything. If this is your first time listening to the Living in Loserville podcast, Purple People Eaters Edition. It's a mouthful. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. It streams live at archives. It's you can find this show under the Rope It Up Radio podcast. You don't have to just go to Blog Talk and listen to it in the browser or download it. You can find it under the Rope It Up Radio podcast at Apple Podcasts, Player FM, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found all across the board, including Spotify. You can use your Siri, Alexa, and find the platform platform, excuse me, right through Spotify or TuneIn, whatever. Why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com? They got a great sponsor over there, betnow.eu, with the promo code TGT. That's thegruelingtruth.com. It's football, it's basketball, it's baseball, it's boxing, it's everything in between. And real quick, one more thing. If you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you have and you're not quite happy, a lot of people archiving a bunch of stuff right now. I know I am. There is something that I actually use myself, AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable, and it's affordable. It's not going to cost you $100, $150, $200 a month. There is a seven-day free trial, so you can just try it out. There's no annual contract. The plans start as low as $55 a month. You can stream it anywhere. They have the cloud DVR. Once again, that's AT&T TV Now live streaming cable. Now, for the folks that just have horrendous, really weak internet, I get it. Whether it's, you know, in a part of the region of the country or just rural area, whatever it is, or you're by an airport like I was not long ago, there is AT&T TV. Now, that's the normal cable package is what I was trying to put together there. It's a growing platform. It's not everywhere. It's here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, in New York, parts of Florida, parts of Texas, parts of California, all the way up to the Northwest and Seattle. I got to slow down here. Other parts of the Midwest of St. Louis. It is in a variety of places. Go to AT&T TV, Google it, put your area code in there, see if you have it. Otherwise, AT&T TV Now, that's live streaming cable. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host, Aaron. See how he's doing. How goes it, sir? How are you?
Hey, man. I'm doing good, man. Yeah, I was looking at that video you sent of the 80s Vikings. So now I want to talk about it. I mean, you think about that's like the first Vikings that I saw. And so it's kind of bringing back some memories of going down that lane. And yeah, so excited to talk about it.
Yeah, man, it was fun to do like that. Kevin Garnett got some good feed about that Kevin Garnett podcast episode where we just went over the start, somewhere in the middle, you know, the climax with the 03-04, and then obviously the fall down after that. But just in general, it was really an ode to him per se. But this is gonna be fun, dude, because when you start to see like Carl Lee and Hassan Jones and Jesse Solomon and stuff like that, you start to name some of these rosters. And like I said, just looking on sportsreference.com, it's a great reference for this stuff in all sports, not just football. We've been using it for our basketball show as well, for college basketball and pro. And it is fun to see how they slowly but surely added offensively and defensively to this roster to peak in a wild card year that they kind of backed into to the playoffs. And so we'll definitely get to that in a little bit. You know, since we just had this release, and like I said, they're going to do a 3-hour fucking show on the NFL release. Get it. But golly, really, dude? Yeah. That's even as long as the first round draft on that Thursday, two Thursdays ago. So that's pretty crazy to already think. Is that true? No, was that two Thursdays ago already?
Yeah, it seems like that was probably about two Thursdays ago. Well, see, we had one weekend. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Dang, time flies when you're not doing shit. Okay. And we can only speak for, you know, ourselves here. We know there's plenty of essential workers out there working their ass off, and they should be paid extra. But so we got this schedule here. Okay. And, of course, you know, I had to ask my co-host, so is Seattle in our division? Is that what it is? Because why the F do we have to face them? Not only face them every year, and I understand when you finish second or you finish first, I get all that, but why on the road? There we are. What is it? Week 5?
October 11th.
I mean, on the road at Seattle, how many times can we go down this line, Aaron?
And it has to be another night game. I mean, that's we'll be back in the swing of the season then, talking about Kirk Cousins' performance in high-profile games at night, and it'll pop rear its ugly head again, and we'll be talking all kinds of stuff other than football relating to that game again. And yeah, you feel like there's a rotation, like you said, a second place schedule, but it's just odd that you end up with the night game scheduled at, you know, at on the road with Seattle for the third year in a row. And it seems like there's been maybe a gap year, and then before that there was another road game in Seattle. So I don't know if that's how the coin falls or if there's other things at work here, but it's I guess more than coincidental. And yeah, I mean, Seattle was an AFC team. Now they're NFC. Now apparently they're in the NFC North, or we're in the NFC West, one of the two.
Yeah, it's just silly after a while. It's like, okay, if we have to play them for, what is it, four straight years, then can we get a home game? I mean, is that the hard? It's just, come on, dude. It's just, anyway, I'm already complaining about it. Okay, so we're high.
I'm already in my cousin's rants.
Already. Yeah. We're already four games high noon, and the Zimmer era, not that it really matters, but the Cousins stuff, a variety of things actually bode well across the NFL, by the way, not just with the Bikes, for high noon games. It's kind of funny. So we do have four in a row right away. So we got week one, Green Bay at home. I like having, you know, basically going into that with a bye in a sense, right? And on the flip side, week seven, going in on the road at Green Bay with a bye. I like that. So that's a heck of a stretch though, Aaron. Green Bay, the Colts on the road, which they should be improved. Tennessee, we'll see if they sign old boy to a long contract, which I assume they will. At Texas, they've lost some weapons, but they're still on the up and up. We already talked about Seattle. Atlanta, you never know what you're going to get with them. It's a home game at Green Bay and at Detroit. So Green Bay divisional, then no divisional games, then three straight divisional games. What do you feel about 1-9 with a bye in there, sir?
I mean, it seems kind of chalk. There's Green Bay to start off the season kind of reminds me of maybe it's our turn now, because Green Bay would always start with the Bears, it seemed like. So feels like that's kind of the ebb and flow of the schedule. Indianapolis, get to see Rhodes again in a different light. Tennessee, like you said, Henry, you know, if he's playing well and if they sign the guy, I mean, could be a tough game. And like you said, there's not a lot of divisional games, but then you get that stretch after the bye at three straight. And so, yeah, I mean, it seems like a pretty ho-hum, but, you know, Atlanta's fishy. You don't know what they're going to be. They're either going to be really good or struggling a little bit. And so, I mean, at least that's a home game. You can kind of hang your hat on that. But overall, I mean, it seems like a pretty decent schedule. Like I think we talked about, you know, getting up to this November 16th game. These are all, you know, still kind of fall games, and moving into winter, schedule looks kind of good for that come the second half of the season.
Yeah, you're right. We talked about November 1st. Could it snow? Yeah, but how, I mean, in reality, knock on wood, it's Minnesota, but in reality, how cold could it actually get by that time, especially at noon? But yeah, look at night. There's only one night game and the rest are noons, because they don't start tweaking it until later in the season. But you're right. And then what was the other game we looked at? Chicago, at Chicago, yeah. 2 weeks later. That's a good call. I mean, I guess you could say, like, the wind and rain could happen in Tampa, you know, after there, I guess you could say. But other than that, it is going to be played indoor, or at least not in super cold temperatures. I really like that stretch that we talked about at home, Dallas, Carolina, and Jacksonville. I mean, it's hard to say. Here we are. This is how much we're into this stuff. Those three are must wins. Like we know what a must win is right now, but it does feel like those are all winnable games. So we really need to take advantage of them. That stretch. So that's a nice stretch. Don't have to go on the road at Chicago to close the season, but we are still, or at home, whatever. That it's been Chicago the last couple of seasons. So that's a little bit different. And here we are with fucking New Orleans again. So is New Orleans in our division in Tampa? How did all this stuff happen, and why is it on the road? I'm sorry, I'm going over the same territory.
Yeah, you are, but I understand where you're coming from. I mean, we've seen a lot of the same faces. I mean, New Orleans every year seems to be that's the way it falls. Little revenge game for them. They're at, you know, it's at their place this time. It could be a really meaningful game coming down the stretch, either for seeding or just for needing to win. Like you said, that stretch of Dallas, Carolina, Jacksonville. You know, as things stay kind of status quo, I could see us having a rough game with Dallas, but Carolina and Jacksonville might be wins that should be, you know, easier than right. not, I guess. But it's hard to tell. You know, all it takes is, you know, a good player to step up or somebody getting a hot hand, and, you know, there goes that. But, yeah, I mean, and also, you know, actually having a meaningful second game with Chicago will be kind of nice instead of having that last game of who's going to play, who's going to not play. You know, we haven't had one of those for a while, so it'd be nice to have Chicago at home with some chips down.
Well, I mean, a few years back we did have one at home and we got slaughtered.
With sure. Yep.
But no, you're right. That's a good call. That's a really good call. That actually, it's not like, well, we'll see when we get there. No, we're gonna need that one for sure. So right now, this is from Vikings Wire USA Today. I also saw it from a different source on Twitter. Based on the records from last season, obviously, we have the Vikings have the 10th toughest schedule. The Minnesota's opponents are 51.6 winning percentage in 2019. But like it says right here, there's a good chance that the Lions, the Bears, the Falcons, the Panthers, the Colts, the Bucks, they probably a good chunk of them will be up. You know, it should be improved somewhat, although there could be some teams on the flip side that are down. That's the thing about the NFL that makes it exciting, but also, you know, it's in between on that, I guess you could say. Speaking of the draft, speaking of some of the things we're going to talk about, whether we should bring Griff back or sign Klein to play the left guard or, you know, there's still available stuff that we'll mention in the O-line and all that. I sent you this article earlier as well, and just off the top of your head, you know, it's this Forbes, you know, not a Forbes list, although Forbes is everywhere in sports and everything now. So it has nothing to do with money, but it's the title of it, I thought it was kind of interesting. Minnesota Vikings make up ground on the NFC North rivals in the draft. Did they make up ground? The Packers and the Bears, oh my, they didn't necessarily have a great draft. The Lions, some people were very impressed what they did. What do you think to that question? Do you think we made up some ground? And some folks are picking us to win the division, given that it is May and we don't even know if there's a season yet.
Yeah, you know, I don't know, Chris. I mean, on paper, I suppose we made up ground just because of people are, you know, expecting some, you know, shenanigans in Green Bay, which I don't think are going to happen. I think Rodgers is pretty professional. And, you know, they're not losing anybody. They might not be gaining anybody, but they're not losing anybody, you know, that was really that meaningful. I think Detroit had an excellent draft, kind of a sleeper draft. I think we talked about that in the post-draft show, that they really filled some holes with some good players, especially on the offensive line. So it's not going to be a sack fest, I don't think, this season if those, any of those guys pan out. So, I mean, and then we've got a bunch of young kids in the secondary. I mean, we might get a veteran in. We might get Hughes to come up and play a little better. Holton Hill might play a little better, but all those three young guys for depth, I mean, we get an injury or one of those guys isn't up to snuff. I mean, it's going to be a rough year on defense, I think, unless everything can kind of, you know, meld together. So I think a lot of that will depend on how well that defense plays. And I'm excited to see it play. It's nice to have new blood in there, but it's going to take a little time, I think. So I don't know if we're that much better. But I guess on paper, I can see where people would say that maybe we've you know, rose to the top of the division. But, you know, Cousins is mercurial. I mean, you don't know. You know, he had a great season last year. The season before when he was kind of new wasn't so great. A lot depends on how well he plays. Can Jefferson come in and be the other side of Thielen? There's a lot of questions, but I suppose on paper it does seem like we've come up a bit in the North.
Yeah, and that's basically what it was. Just based off, and we don't know until 2-3 years. People say, well, 5 years. No, we don't need 5 years to find out if these guys are good. But you need a good 2 to 3 because there are some guys that in their second and third year, they really take off. So, yeah, a lot of it's just speculation. On paper, it does seem like we made a jump that way. And what it holds for this next season, I'm really up in the air. And I think anyone should be. Anyway, but especially when our roster isn't filled out just yet, that helps too. Before we get to that real quick, there is a little bit of news as far as NFL teams opening up their facility. The NFL tells teams to basically have your facility ready to reopen. Got the protocols in place by May 15th. This is coming from old local guy, Kevin Seifert. And basically, they just laid out a bunch of different rules as you ease yourself into these facilities. And obviously, these facilities depend on what your state's doing as well. So obviously, that has something to do with it. March 19th, there is going to be a virtual league meeting that they're going to discuss a bunch of this stuff. The memo went on to say all these teams got this memo that, you know, right away it'd be no more than 50% of non-player staff and up to only 75 people per day. The only players that would be permitted to return in that first wave would be players that were actually hurt and rehabbing their injury. So you could obviously social distance pretty easy that way. Of course, like I said, the state and local governments, they're going to have to make sure the cleaning supplies, infection response, a bunch of stuff, you know, that they're going to have to go through just to get the doors open. Then you might be able to get some folks in there. Then you might be able to have, because they are doing the virtual meetings, but I think the drill work could definitely do it. There are some things that they can work on where they have, you know, just the secondary in for 2 hours, then just the linebacker, just the defensive line, you know, that type of thing. It is a huge facility, so that's helpful as well. So there is a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. I'm not saying a whole lot, but, you know, there is some light down there. We have no clue in general, but especially with fans in the building, that's a rough one. Now, lucky NFL-wise, the NFL makes a grip of their money from their television rights. You know what I mean? That makes a bunch of money, and those are already contractually paid for. So they got that coming in. Whereas, like, for instance, we talked about this a couple days ago on the other show, that college football right now, dude, like, those selling those tickets for those 60 and 70 and 80 and in what is it, like 15 teams, programs that have over 100,000 folks in their stadiums, that actually, they're going to lose out big on that. So that's kind of a worry. But the NFL, even if the first half of the season or none of the season has it, I think they'll be able to operate. Of course, they'll lose some money, but a lot of that will be within the franchise. And hopefully the NFL as a company can spread that out like they profit share on a bunch of other stuff. Well, let's see them profit share and kind of make up for these teams if possible. But just a couple items real quick we're going to breeze through before we get to reminiscing about that 87 season. And just the Vikings roster in the 80s, like I said, you talk about Bloody Pants Studwell and Chris Dolman and Keith Millard and Darren Nelson. We're going to talk about it. We're definitely going to talk about it. Like I said, I got some fun audio clips as well. So free agent-wise, before I, you know, go over the list that I've – a couple names have been added onto it, but it's pretty much the list that we've known about. Before we get into the guard and cornerback availability, let's talk about some familiar faces. Right now, would you be inclined to bring Griff back just as another end, you know, that he could – because he played pretty damn good last year. And, you know, we talked about it at the end of the season, being able to flex him on the inside where he actually spent the first 4 years of his career. A lot of it was rushing on the inside because, remember, we had Allen and we had Robinson. So we had those two. He actually rushed from the inside, which I think he could be very effective at. And also, we'd bring him back at even less snaps. That would be the goal because we do have an up-and-comer ready to go. Would you bring Griff back? Or even Klein? We can go a little further in there. What do you think about bringing good old Griff back? He definitely wants to be here. I think he's proven it now that he hasn't taken a deal with somebody, you know?
Yeah. First, you know, subject Griffin. Yeah, I mean, I'm hesitant because I feel like if you've already cut that tie, just leave it cut. You know, don't – it's, you've made the move. I know it was probably difficult to make. You might just want to close the chapter on that and move on. Now, that being said, yeah, it would be nice to have him as either a mentor or a guy that can still rush on the end or maybe work him inside, use him in a lot of different ways. It would be nice to have that. But I think, and I don't know this for a fact, but I feel like they've really moved on from him as a person. Not that he's a bad dude or anything, but it's like it was probably really hard to let him go in the first place. And, you know, to reopen that again might be against kind of what they're going now. They want to get younger. I mean, Zim specifically said that it's a young person's league at the end of the season. He might have been pointing at Griffin with that statement. He might have been pointing at some others. Nobody knows. But I feel like, you know, you close the book on it, leave it closed. If you're going to open it back up again, then you got to, you know, reclose it again. And that just could be a tough thing. And now on Klein, yeah, I say find him, bring him back if he's healthy and he can play. We need him to play. I don't have any faith in Elfline. And now I really hope that I can grow some because I feel like he's going to just, because of the state of the world at the moment, it's going to be penciled in at that other guard position just because he knows it. He's a body. Right. He's got experience in it. It's kind of his spot. And I suppose, you know, technically, if I were him, it'd be my spot to lose. And so you'd want to come in and compete, but I just don't have a lot of faith after what we've seen the last two seasons now. I did see a breakdown of his injuries and the timing of them gave me a little bit more hope that maybe he was banged up really bad and needs that year to get better. And you know, maybe he'll turn into something really productive this season. So I'm kind of on the fence with him. But I think even as an insurance policy, instead of moving a tackle to a guard, a guard to a center, a center to a guard, all that stuff can be solved by bringing Klein back if he's healthy, his head's right, and he wants to play. I mean, I say, yeah, bring back Klein.
You hit it right on the head. Insurance policy. Now, we're not, you know, saying, let's sign him for a five-year deal. That's not what we're saying, folks. Don't put those words in our mouth. No, but really, you hit it on the nose right there. Insurance policy. How can it hurt us? It can. It really can't hurt us. Okay, if someone overtakes him by midseason, okay, you cut him. Like, it's not that big of a deal. The Griffith thing, though, technically they didn't close the book all the way, though. He actually opted out of his deal. We didn't cut him. He did opt out. And we left it. Oh, we did actually leave the bookmark, like, at the front page. You know, like, if I read it again, I'll have a bookmark. We did leave it open, and they've even said, well, you never know. And remember, actually, what's his toe? Zimmer, the one-eyed bandit who likes to show his trophies, you know, to everyone in the world on his wall. They actually thought he'd bring him back. So I'd like him for depth. Whether it's in, I really like the guy we got there. I think he's going to be a pretty damn good player. But like I said, on third down to get another pass rusher inside, I think that'd be worth it just in general. And I guess you could say depth, but I'm with you on the, like I said, you hit it on the head, man. Insurance policy for Coleman, dude. Like, it can't hurt us. It really can. I'm a little confused on why they cut him. Go ahead.
So I'm a little confused. I've been watching, you know, YouTube and articles and everything else, and everybody's got these grand plans to be moving around offensive linemen to different positions, but I haven't heard one word from the Vikings about that as a possibility. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on where the Vikings stand. I know every pundit in the world and every, you know, host of this and that has their grand ideas to move Reef to guard and move Bradbury to tackle or whatever, you know, just every possible combination. Right. But I have not heard anything from Spielman, thank God, and I have not heard anything from Zimmer on that matter. And frankly, I'm just sick of everybody's concocted offensive lines. If you look at the players that we have in position, and I think we can segue into offensive line with this, is that leave it at their positions that they played. I'm sick of this moving stuff around. Yeah, we thought it might be good with Remmers. Was not. Outright disaster with Remmers. Now, yes. Maybe there's a problem. I don't know, but every time we've – Elfline too. I mean, it's just not a thing that's one as easy as people think, and two, good for the player. It takes. I heard an offensive lineman. I forgot who it was. I think it was the dudes on the bus, Luan from Tennessee. And he was like, "Look, you move a guy from even to the right side to the left side, and we're not even talking about a position change. But right. It takes 3 months to like get the muscle memory for that other side. You know, at least 3 months to just be adequate at it. Now." we might not have a lot of practice time. We might not have a lot of all this stuff. Do not move anybody. What are your thoughts on it, man? I just keep hearing all these different combinations. Frankly, it's just nonsense to me.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not a big fan of that. I think you've laid out a great case. The last show we did with the post draft, would I be willing to try Cleveland at guard? Sure. Okay. Yeah, because he's new. But it was only under the assumption of plug and play him, or it wouldn't be a plug and play, but play him after the fourth or fifth week or something. So get him in the door as a tackle, say this is what you want me to play, and then sometime maybe even get him in there game four of the preseason at guard and get him so he actually is somewhat comfortable with what they're asking and he knows what they need, what they say he needs to work on tackle. And we know he's probably – well, I shouldn't say no, but we don't think he's going to start right away. So, 6 weeks go by, then all of a sudden the season starts. Your practice goes down, the amount of practice. You could do a lot of drill stuff. But also, you could be on the practice squad as a guard or whatever. I'd be okay with that because you're a young player and you're a big body. And it does seem like you may have to get a little stronger on the edge anyway. Maybe he's going to be a good enough at guard, better than what we have here. But other than that, I don't want to move guys all the way around, and especially guys that we feel like we're going to start. It's now if Cleveland shows this great stuff and moving, what's Riley in the guard? I guess if he's on the roster, you move him over. Okay, I guess I think that when you do that, though, you might as well do, like you said, you might as well bring Klein back because he's been a guard on both sides. Bring guys that are a little bit more into that, and that does, it's a great segue to the line. Right now where we stand, the improvement, like within the players that are on the line that we know are going to play, yes, I think they could make a jump. I think O'Neal could make another, maybe you could say a baby jump, not the jump he just made. I hope he makes that kind of jump, but that'd be pretty crazy. That'd be nice though, but he's going to be damn good. But obviously Bradbury is good. He's got to make a jump clearly. And I believe he will, especially at that center position, the second year. Those second and third years where you generally make your jump. So those, especially in the middle, if he makes a jump, okay, then you could say maybe we'll be up on par because we lost Klein. But is Dozier better than – you know what I mean? Like I do – like we said about Drew Samia, I believe in him as a right guard. That's where they're trying him. I believe we can be just as good at that position, potentially. And that is potential. We know what we got with Klein, though. That's the difference. But I'd be willing to take this second-year guy if we knew what we had at left guard. And so right now, that question that people are asking and all that, I just don't think right now, as it stands, that it is a Super Bowl offensive line per se. Now, we haven't been in the Super Bowl. So I hate to say a Super Bowl line, but an actual legitimate chance to make it with that offensive line. I think the Niners game, the Green Bay game closing the season, a few other games really put it in perspective of, yes, from 2018 to 2019, our line made a jump, no doubt. We ran the ball much better. We are a very good offensive line, but we're nowhere near great right now. Well, maybe I shouldn't say nowhere near, but you could kind of see the separation with that San Francisco game, and that's what got me so mad as, well, they could have lost someone. They did to retirement, but they filled it in with an all-pro, so they should probably be just as good. So right now, no, I'm a little skeptical on our offensive line. And I say I'm right with you as far as what you asked me, and let's try to get these guys to play in their positions.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I start with it. And then you go into other – your question being, is are we Super Bowl offensive line? I don't know, Chris. I mean, I think we're a great run-blocking line. I think we're – I won't – great's a strong word, but I really think as far as the zone play, it's good. It's all the pass blocking that it concerns me. And, again, they're lighter guys with lighter, quick guys to run the zone scheme. And you know, you run into Akeem Hicks, you run into those guys, man, and they can tear it up and just ruin your offense. And I think that is one of the Achilles heels of that system. And there's just a division full of it. I mean, the North has just got tons of beasts on the defensive line, and they can just wreak havoc. And so I worry about that as far as the scheme goes. But if you want to run the football, which is what they say they want to do, run play action, it's what they want to do. They want to run bootlegs, fine. I think it's an adequate offensive line that could get you to the Super Bowl, assuming that, you know, Klein comes back or we get adequate left guard play. I think it could be one, but that would require, you know, us having an excellent running attack, because this defense, like I said earlier, is not going to be the greatest. I mean, I think even at the worst, the defense is going to be probably top 12, top 14, just having Zimmer there to run it. But, you know, and you can win with that, but then you got to run the football. And that's what we're trying to do. So I guess, you know, quick answer, yes, I guess it's a line that could get you to the Super Bowl, assuming that left guard position gets sussed out. Like, I just don't see it, man. I don't want to move Cleveland there. I want to keep him at tackle. I don't want to move O'Neal to the left side. I think he's good at the right side. So then you're going to put Ezra, you know, backing up Reef. Reef can play. I mean, he runs into a few guys that he's not good with, like Mac and so on. But he's adequate. Who's going to be good against Mac? I mean, he's tough, man. So, and they move him around to the right and the left, and they move him everywhere. So, I mean, and you're going to face guys like that. The Niners, will probably see them in the playoffs if we go again, and they've got the Bosa kid. And so I thought we held up decently against him. It's just about running the football. I think they've got the guys to do it. I think as long as they get that guard dealt with, and that's where, you know, I think it's just, you got to bring Klein back at least until you know you have something else.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Now, this isn't necessarily a question or every specific thing I mentioned. I'm just kind of going over the off season list of things that could possibly do. This is actually on Score North, from scorenorth.com. They talk about, you know, something that we've already breached on this one, is the Dalvin Cook contract extension. These are things you could still do to improve the team, or just in general available to do in general, whether it doesn't necessarily improve them, but these are just more items you could do left in free agency. Talked about Cook signing Anthony Harris to a contract extension, which would bring down his cap number for this year. That'd be something that would make sense, especially with these young freaking guys that we have at corner. It'd be nice to have the back end figured out. You know, we talked about there's still trades out there. I mean, Riley Reiff could be in there. You know, there's no doubt about it. They mentioned Joe Tunney from Patriots. That could be and sign him to an extension. That could be. We talked about that Cowboys guard a while back. He also talks about signing Jason Peterson to a one-year deal and restructuring Reiff's contract. Play him at guard. Not Reiff, but Peters. Or get rid of him at that point. And by the way, with trading Riley Reiff, I thought this was a good point here. It's worth noting that the Vikings can create $11 million in cap space by trading Reiff after June 1st. Right now, you actually have, like, what is it? I think you can only reach 8.8 because of the dead money. So that's something to think about. And it's not over. It's not over. We could still make a good trade. We mentioned Klein, a quality interior offensive lineman like Ron Lear. I know I've seen a lot of people talk about Osamili. And that cornerback's literally, Logan Ryan is not a Titan. It just made official just a couple days ago. They couldn't come to terms. Talib, Dre Kirkpatrick, I want that guy. Tremaine Johnson, Tremaine Williams, Brandon Carr. There's corners out there that are either, you know, 1 year, a few years, get a Newman who looked like he was aging. He gave us two more years, that type of thing. So it's not all over. We can still add to this rosters. Any thoughts as far as anything that I just discussed or in general that's kind of in the back of your head before we get to the good old Vikings 1980s edition?
Well, what strikes me is the lack of experience in the secondary. And so I think you're right about the Kirkpatrick. He played for Zimmer before. He's a plug-and-play guy. you know, get brushed up on what Zimmer wants to do, maybe the changes that have happened since he played for him. And you can play him until you're ready to play one of the kids. I mean, I think that those kids, cornerback's such a sensitive position, and you lose confidence, that could spiral. You lose a whole year to that. You could possibly lose a career to that. I just don't want to go throwing these guys up against Rodgers on game one and have him just pick their confidence apart. And he will. I mean, that's the NFL. So, and I want to give them those guys a little bit more time. I think Gladney's probably going to get pushed to play that nickel pretty quickly. I just don't see anybody else that can play it. Maybe Hughes. So I think, yeah, you want to have a veteran corner in, and you've been selling me on that all year, and I've been kind of hesitant, but now I see it, and I think that you're absolutely right. Get someone in at least for 8 games, maybe a whole season, just to let the kids kind of develop and learn before they get thrown to the wolves.
All righty, sir. So I have the, and by the way, for anybody out there, like I mentioned, this is the profootballreference.com, but reference, sports reference, it, just in general, the website is the bomb. It, you can just look up any roster and it gives you the stats. It gives you, you know, the win loss as far as who they played. It gives you the roster. It gives the stats for the season. And it just digs deep. It's just an easy way to kind of go through a roster like, oh, yeah, that guy. Oh, that guy. And I have it sitting here at 1980. So the beginning of the run, the beginning of the decade, of course. And you can just see how we kind of put some of this roster together and, you know, how some of these folks weren't on the roster that peaked at 87, of course. Some of them weren't playing as big as roles like Tommy Kramer. But just seeing some of this really brings back the names, man. Tommy Two Drink Kramer, Two Drink Tommy, a guy that is known to the night before just buy the whole bar. They, back in the day, we didn't call it buy the bar, but that's basically what he was doing, even if it was a noon game. Two Drink Tommy Kramer, age 25, 3 years at that point. Ted Brown, I do remember. Look at our wide receivers. We still had Ahmad Rashad at the time, but Sammy White was another guy that really stood out to me. Matt Blair and Scott Studwell were really kind of the holdovers, especially Studwell, of course. Just moving in from 80, you start to look at the 81 roster. Pretty much the same. Nothing really pops up where you're like, oh, that guy got added. Or you know, there was some additions, but not many. Then you got the rook, Darren Nelson, the next year after that. So you got Ted Brown and Darren Nelson. Tim Irwin jumped in, that offensive lineman, on the scene by that time. But still, you can see we're just building at that point. And I'm just going to bring it up until we get to 87. And then we're going to talk about, before we can get there, just some of these players, dude. It's so fun to see these freaking names. And some of them, I totally forgot. I was like, oh, my God, that's right. And when you look at our secondary, you look at our defense, it actually, especially defensively, like I mentioned, it took a while to get going in general to start to see some of these names that we know. I mean, I pushed it to 84, 85. Another thing I forgot, but I guess that's just living in Loserville. You kind of get numb to it. They hadn't been to the playoffs for 5 straight years before that 88 or that 87 season, which kind of threw me off like, oh, that's right. That's why it was so special. Then we jump up to 1985, Aaron, and our guy AC, Anthony Carter, rookie year, Leo Lewis had joined the squad. Steve Jordan had gotten to the starting lineup. Now we're starting to see Chris Dolman pop in there, Joey Browner pop in there. And when we get to 86, it starts to really fill out, no doubt about it. Gary Zimmerman on the line was a tough son of a bitch. I remember Doug Martin. I had forgotten about him, but then when I went back and watched that film, I was like, oh, dude. Then you start to see Carl Lee in the corner, Isaac Holt on the other one. So here we are, 1987. I mean, we're set. We got Huffman, Zimmerman, Loudermilk, Tim Irwin on the offensive line. Same guys. Alfred Anderson now is in the mix as that fullback, and it seems like everybody had a fullback then. Like, it's in their starting lineup fullback, which always kind of cracks me up. We got a rookie, Henry Thomas, that started just ripping shit up. Same with Jesse Solomon. So you're looking at it by 87, it is on and popping. And this is the scab league where what was it? 0-3 or 1-3, something like that was a scab league where they took over during the season. And I totally remember that. I remember where I was in a couple of these games too, these playoff games. But I remember watching half-heartedly at my pop's house the scab games, just like, man, I'm pissed. We got a squad. This is our year to go to the playoffs. What the hell? And we had a horrible scab team. And Darren Nelson even says it like, you know, we are 8-4 in general. They did kind of back into the playoffs. I think they lost 3 out of 4. One of the teams, and I didn't remember this one, Aaron, either, was Washington. And we had gotten up on them by 10 in the fourth quarter. They ended up winning in overtime later that year. But just some of the thoughts before we get into the Saints and the Niners and the heartbreaker, just hearing some of these names, dude, it just blows you away to hear these freaking names and just Wade Wilson and that type of thing.
Yeah, it's fun. This was like the first Viking team that I remember I was really like really into. You had like Wade Wilson. You had three quarterbacks, Rich Gannon. You had Tommy Kramer was usable then. And like two drink Tommy. I mean, that's when I play my best pool. There's a couple drinks in.
Right.
But then you get to that fourth drink and it's a nightmare. So, you know, you got to watch after that two drinks, got to stay in the zone there. And then, you know, Anthony Carter had a sweet season. And you know, one thing I spotted on that video that you sent me, Chris, I don't know if you're going to get into it later, but I certainly hope I'm not stepping on it. But they hadn't had a punt return touchdown since 1968. They got one in 1987. So that's a real Viking stretch there that makes a lot of sense. And like you said, the offensive line was set. We hadn't quite gotten Randall McDaniel yet, but he's coming in the next couple seasons. And then that defense, we'll just focus on that a little bit. I mean, you got Millard, Dolman, Henry Thomas. That's a nice defensive front. Joey Browner in there. Just great guys. Cornerbacks there were pretty nice. Carl Lee. I mean, these guys were – that was a heck of a squad. I know we had the scab season then, and that was kind of tough to deal with, but – pretty nice. Burnsy had a pretty nice team to deal with there. Steve Jordan had a great season. Zimmerman, he's not a Hall of Famer. Irwin's not a Hall. Is Irwin a Hall of Famer? I don't think he is.
I don't think so, but it's borderline.
I
could be wrong about that, though.
Like, he might still get in if he's not in. Loudermilk, you know, Darren Nelson, Alfred Anderson, DJ Dozier. I mean, those were all the guys that I first remember when I was first a fan of the Vikings.
All right, I'm gonna check real quick to see if he's actually in. It doesn't look like it.
Still had Studwell too, man. I mean, Studwell was on that, playing linebacker.
Just popping up too. Bloody pants, Studwell, every damn game.
Every game.
Found a way. And they even said when he got older, and that year he made the Pro Bowl for the first time. And I didn't realize that. But that year that he'd actually like, fuck it, I'm going to cut myself if I don't have any blood. Like, he just cut his arm or something and be like, no, I got to have some blood, dude. I gotta have some blood on me. Let me look here. Yeah, it doesn't look like Irwin isn't. Yeah, I think you're right. He's not there.
I mean, he's damn good, though, man.
Damn, those guys are fucking – they were good.
Yeah,
they
the old neck roll days with the big pads. it's so fun to watch, man. And Dolman, what a beast. I think 6'5", 260. Like, that's just incredible.
Back then, dude, that's your edge, 6'5", 260. That's what we go with almost right now.
And they said in 86 he played outside linebacker in a 3.
Right, yeah, that's right, yeah.
So, I mean, that's ridiculous, man. He ended up – I don't know if he met the Hall of Fame or not. I think he did. I don't know.
Yeah, I think he did.
Yeah, it's hard to tell with these Vikings sometimes. But, yeah, I mean, that offensive line and that defensive line is where you build a football team, and they definitely had the guys to play there.
Yeah, and in the 80s, Bud Grant was the early, you know, the first 3 years or whatever. Then he retired but came back. I think it was 84, the year we opened up the Metrodome, came back real quick. Then we had Les Steckel, that Army guy who was going to turn it around, had one of the worst seasons ever. I think we were 3-13 or something like that. Guys like, well, even like Sensor, the backup tight end, bench warmer Bob Lertzema was in the mix as well, which I almost forgot about his ass. I said Darren Nelson, Sammy White, was definitely I really like Sammy White. Leo Lewis was like a nice receiver too. I remember when he went to the Packers, me and my brother got tickets from our neighbors, and our neighbors were Packer fans. And we didn't really realize the whole thing. So we got there and we were in a Packer section. It was like, oh, shit. But Leo Lewis for the Packers, that's where he caught the ball and did like those steps, like three or four steps on that 1 foot and jumped in. It was like, oh, you bastard. But that was, Joey Browner with the horse collar on, I think it's Highsmith, right at the goal line for Denver. I think it was on a Monday night home game. And he broke his leg. I think he messed up his career. When horse collars were beyond, like you said, the actual horse collars were huge. But the horse collar clothesline tackle stopped him, ran behind him, and all like chased him down, stopped him at the one and broke his leg, just ripping him down. Joey Browner was a man amongst boys. That dude was a raw dude, to put it nicely, or to put it lightly. But you're right with that So they backed in. You're right with that Anthony Carter, 85-yard. But 44-10, you know, they got off to a bad start. I remember seeing that. I didn't remember it live, but I remember now, you know, seeing like the – not live, but when I just watched it today, the fumble. And it's like, oh, it's a Viking start by Kramer. Oh, there's the fumble. Oh, a little pass. They're up 7-0. But then Chuck Nelson was another guy too, the field goal. He set a record – in that Niners game that we'll get to as well with 5 field goals, I believe, along with AC setting records. But just kind of bringing it back right around that time frame. I do have some clips off this. And like I said, if anybody – like, you just got to check it out if you're a Vikings fan. It's worth it. Trust me. It's called It's called Making a Move 1987 is what it is. It's on YouTube. Just put those in there, or Vikings 87. I'm sure that would pop up pretty easily. But it is freaking hilarious to watch this stuff. It brings back all these freaking memories. You can really start – like, I totally remember this. I 100% remember this punt return. I didn't remember that it was that, you know, that we hadn't done in that long. But that was like the beginning of his dominance in the playoffs in general. And I'm talking about AC. And I remember being at my grandpa's watching this game, just freaking out when AC did this. So here's the first clip.
Anthony Carter's incredible 84-yard punt return was the longest in NFL playoff history. And sent an early message to the Saints. You may be the top act in town, but today, we're here to steal the show.
And they got the cheesy, you know, stuff to go with it, and we're here, and then the do-do-do-do, they got the cheesy stuff, but it's poetic. A lot of this stuff is poetic, dude. And I didn't, you know what I forgot? I forgot just how actually good the Saints were that year. I had kind of forgotten just how good they were. They had a really, what are they? I think 12-3, if I remember correctly. And that's pretty, they were really good. And the Niners coming up next, here's another clip though. They were like the favorite to win the Super Bowl.
But any doubt that Minnesota belonged had now been put to rest.
Because not counting the strike games, we were 8-4, and heck, that's not backing it anywhere. You know, we're 8-4. You know, there were two or three teams that had a better record than we did, but for the most part, we deserved to be here.
It was a total team effort and a total team win, something that we haven't had in quite some time. Hopefully, this can carry over in San Francisco.
The next challenge was even greater. The 13-2 San Francisco 49ers, owners of the NFL's best offense and defense, and prohibitive favorites to win their third Super Bowl in the 80s.
Dude, that's – we're going to stop it there just to catch up. But, I mean, 13-2, they're going for their third championship. number one offense and number one defense. I had forgotten that part. You there, Aaron? Oh, you're muted.
Yeah, I was on mute. So I was just going to say, just to put it in context, I was like a 12-year-old kid living in Montana amongst the sea of Chicago Bear fans because they had just won the Super Bowl 2 years earlier than that. And my family was from Minnesota. That's how I ended up glomming on to being a Viking fan. So I'm the only purple jacket. I had a Sears Vikings purple jacket with the horn on it. Still wish I had it because that thing was awesome. But I was the only one. It's awesome. And there was just everybody else was a Bears fans, and I had an insufferable, you never make the Super Bowl. They had all these great nicknames, Vikings, and all these great things for the Vikings back then. And they played in the, you know, in the Metrodome, and everybody had their things to say about that. And I hated the Denver Broncos, and I hated the Green Bay Packers. And there was one kid in my class that was a Denver Bronco fan. I think I hated the Broncos just because of that kid. I don't remember his name, but he was unsufferable. And yeah, so it's just bringing me back to that point in time and just watching these Viking games, and especially when they played the Bears, and just being like, come on, man, win, win, win. So yeah, it was interesting, man. And I just hearing like Leo Lewis did that punt return. I'm sure we'll hear that clip. And just hearing these clips, these are the clips that I remember, man. This is a nice little rundown memory lane.
It really is, man. I'm going to go back to him real quick.
Many believed the game would not be close, and they were right. But it was Minnesota, not San Francisco, that showed its muscle by dominating the line of scrimmage. Wade Wilson scoring passes to Carl Hilton and Hassan Jones were the only two touchdowns the Viking offense would need. The stunned San Francisco faithful watched helplessly as the underdog Vikings pulled the soggy Candlestick turf out from under their 49ers.
And of course, Candlestick Park. And it's just the way he describes this stuff. I really love, you know, it's really funny that in that great game, 10 catches, 221 or something, no touchdowns for AC. Here's a little bit more, though.
And cradle.
Oh, hold on. Yeah, sorry.
Rookie quarterback Reggie Rutland landed the biggest prize of his life and cradled his trophy 45 yards for the score that broke the 49ers' backs. While Rutland and the other Vikings beat the 49ers on field level, one player beat them by soaring high above it into a stratosphere all his own.
You see.
The incredible Anthony Carter snatched 10 catches out of thin air for an NFL playoff record 227 yards.
Just jump ball catches, too. Very tough catches.
In a day filled with brilliant Viking performances, Carter's was the showstopper. Another NFL playoff record was set when kicker Chuck Nelson booted 5 field goals and went on to be perfect in the postseason.
I mean, that was like, God, it just brings back so many freaking memories to hear this stuff. And I mean, I was just jumping for joy. The Saints game, that was great and all that, don't get me wrong. But by the time this Niners game was over, I remember where I was watching at my Uncle Ross's in Aunt Josephine's house. And I remember just sitting there like in shock early on. And it just kept going and going. And he was just like, get the ball to AC. Man, that was a crazy upset. And I knew it was a big upset back then, Aaron. But I just didn't realize they were 13-2. And like I mentioned just a second ago, number one against in number one at offense and defense. We just destroyed them that day in Candlestick Park, dude.
Well, that was prime. I mean, that was Joe Montana in his prime, Jerry Rice in his prime. I mean, Ronnie Lott. I mean, all these guys, a great team, the San Francisco 49ers, where you didn't think you had a shot going in there. I mean, these were just all-timers. And to go and play like that, you're right. Ball went up to Carter. You knew he was going to get it, and I just flashed back on it when that clip came up. I was like, man, I do remember that day now. And it was like, yeah, because I was like, we're going to the Super Bowl. And I'm not one to, like, get braggy, but I was just walking around like, yeah, we're going to the Super Bowl. This is awesome team. I can't believe we won this game. It was amazing. And I remember, you know, we've always had receivers here, Chris. I mean, it just seems like went from Carter to the next Carter to Moss to now we've got, you know, Jake we had Reed. Diggs, Jake Reed. We've just Hoffa always Jones, had
Sammy White, dude, Ahmad Rashad.
We've been just really, yeah, it really brings out the lineage of like Viking receivers. And I think that's something cool to point out. Now Jefferson gets to join that little club. So I just think that was pretty cool. And yeah, that day for AC, man, that was a Moss-like day way before Randy Moss.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. A couple more clips, and then we'll kind of get out of here.
For more than three periods, the Vikings stood toe-to-toe with the favorite Redskins, battling to a 10-10 tie before Washington managed the go-ahead score.
So this is obviously NFC Championship game. Time winding down at 17-10. There's still hope at this time.
56 seconds remain. Fourth down and 4 yards to go at the Washington 6. The Vikings had one shot to stay alive.
Darren Nelson at the goal line. Drop the ball.
Minnesota came up just short in fulfilling the most unlikely of dreams. But this one loss to the eventual world champions hardly could taint a season filled with extraordinary achievement.
There we have it. All right, man. And, you know, a lot of people said, oh, Darren Nelson cost us it. Well, hold on now. Hold on. It would have been only 17-17, knock on wood, that we makes the extra point. Now, it's a close extra point back then, so, you know, we were better at extra points back then than we are in the last chunk of years, I suppose the NFL in general, because they pushed it back. But that one was rough. I'm not going to lie. Now, you know, we beat the Niners, who a lot of people favored to win the championship, and then they lost to the Skins, and the Skins dominated, I think, Denver. They got down like 10-0, and then Doug Williams just went off, became the first African-American quarterback to win. So, you know, those two teams, one of those two teams were going to win the Super Bowl. So there's no shame in it. But a lot of people want to just point the finger at Darren Nelson. It's like, well, hold on now. You're right. He could have caught the ball, and you know, the corner or the safety made a good play. But it still would have only been 17-7. I mean, 17-all.
Yeah, there's so many theories about, I think I heard a few years ago, somebody else went down this lane about, did Darren have a chance to catch it? Should he have got it? And I think it was a 2-hour show about people just calling in, like, linebacker did this and safety did that and blah, 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 just sticking out in people's mind. But Chris, it just brings up the point and the title of the show. It's always something. It's always something. And then we talked a little bit before. It was like, yeah, we win the Super Bowl this year. It's possibly going to have an asterisk because it'll be the COVID year. And so I could just see that happening, us winning the Super Bowl this season and always having people, you know, telling us that it's not, ah, well, it was a weird year and blah, blah, blah. I don't care. We both said we'd take it. That's fucking great. But, yeah, yeah. Man, it is always something, living in Loserville.
And the next year, because, you know, we're just a step away. We're just a step away. We're right on the doorstep.
Hope, right hope, there. Selling hope.
So you know what we got to do? If we just get Herschel Walker up in this thing, we could take it all. And I believe when he ran out of his shoe, on that kickoff return in the first game of Sunday, I was like, yep, dude, it's over. It is over. It's a wrap. This is happening. And this is when you and I, this year, because we're talking about, you know, later 80s, this is when you and I were living by each other now. Now we start to see, okay, and this is where we became friends and whatnot once you moved back to Minnesota and whatnot. But, man, that next year, and it's funny, you know, that was such a good win against the Niners, right? And that was great. The next year we played in the first round, 41-13, sorry. They just were like, oh, okay, you want to fucking play? Let's fucking play then. And we didn't make, you know, we actually lost to San Francisco to close out the next year as well, not in the playoffs, but just the last game. And then I'm looking at it again, and we didn't make the playoffs. Once we got Herschel, we made one playoffs, and that was it. And you'd have to go up to like 92, and we'll pause right here. But, you know, they were kind of pissed after that. Let's just put it nicely. But
I can't tell you how jacked up I was with that show, with the shoe off run, Herschel Walker. It's on, man. It was on. And then the Sports Illustrated article that came after that. And you're just like, yeah, we're going to, you know, this is unstoppable. Yeah. Meanwhile,
Let's schedule the parade.
Meanwhile, Dallas is just down there building a dynasty.
Right. Jimmy Johnson brought that U to Dallas and brought Irving in and Emmett and Aiken. And we sent Jesse Solomon. I think that was who it was, now that I think about it. And, well, we know where we went, like you said, the title of the show. Any last words before we wrap this up here, sir?
No, man. It was nice to go down memory lane and just bringing up some of those old names. Just makes me feel old and young at the same time, because I didn't remember until we were on the show that game. I remembered that game happened with Carter having that great game, but that wasn't really placed in the place. But then it kind of flashed back, and I knew now I know exactly where I was sitting, exactly what I was thinking, exactly how I felt, and it just was cool to have that memory again. So it was really nice. Good show.
Yeah, man, this was fun. And like you said, next week we're going to do the 90s and go all the way to 98. You know, you never know. It may be just a 30-minute show just doing this if we have no free agents news. Hopefully we got a corner and Klein's back or something like that. But we'll see. We're going to get out of here. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it. Have yourself a good night. Peace.